I was special teaming it up all during the week.
Patrick Manily.
My all-time favorite Bear would have to be Patrick Manily.
Bears long snapper for 16 seasons.
Pat Manily, the long snapper, Maynard, put it in position, and Robbie Gould sends the Bears to the NFC Championship game.
The longest tenured player in Chicago Bears history.
One of the things I immediately miss the most was the legend Dean Pope's office. Olin Kruch, Roberto Garza, Patrick Manley. We never talk football. We talk trash.
Craft Beer Mogul.
Are you drinking the Kool-Aid?
I'm drinking a long snapper IPA.
Patrick Manley.
Yeah, so I'm down here at Alabama in the Coach's Show studio. So where DeBoer shoots his TV show. So I got a nice hookup from somebody to help me get in here, and this is my setup today.
Awesome, man. Yeah. Awesome. I tell you what, that tuition is something now.
Patrick Manley with Spiegel and Holmes on 670 The Score.
Tuition actually not that bad compared to other schools. It's why a lot of kids from the Chicagoland area are finding their way down to Alabama. This segment with Patrick Manley is brought to you by Great Clips. It's gonna be great. Patrick Manley is one of our favorites, and he is here. I've been in that studio too, and the story that I was told when I was a student at Alabama, when I got the tour of the studio that used to be where the Nick Saban show was, is Speegs, the studio has to be ready at all times because Nick Saban will record his show as soon as he got off the plane.
Really?
So if they were playing a road game, it doesn't matter if it's 2 o'clock in the morning, he's coming in and he's recording the Nick Saban show that will then run on Sunday morning / afternoon.
It's good to be the king.
It's really good to be the king.
It's good to be the king. When I have Patrick Manley on the line and the phrase road game comes up, I go to a very different place, Pat.
Have you had a good one lately?
Not lately. Would you care to tell the listeners what a road game is?
Oh, that's when you're... Oh, I think I got it.
Yeah, or would you like me to do it?
Lawrence, Pat, what is it? You tell me. I think you've heard us talk about it before.
A road game is when you're trying to find the best place to go to the bathroom, right?
When you got
to
go number two out on the road.
Yeah.
And you're not at home. Home games are way more fun, aren't they, Pat?
They are, and some places are better than others on the road.
Yeah.
That's right.
So we still have a thread that we call Road Game Review from the old Spiegel and Manley show. It's me, Pat, and Shep, and Jay. And every once in a while, we'll send each other pictures from our road game locations with reviews.
Oh, it's once or twice a month. It'll come up. Somebody random. It's everybody is showing it somewhere, but boys will be boys, right?
I'll offer this as someone, you know, who has Crohn's disease, and this becomes like a thing.
Oh, wow. Yeah, you need to be.
Right.
Yeah.
You know what's a good choice is?
What?
A university. If you're anywhere near a university,
that's good.
That's a good place to, you know, jump out.
Sure.
You've got some options, too. And
sure,
you don't feel crazy about going. Like, it's not going to be a mess because they're usually cleaning up pretty regularly.
Pat, in your experience, do you have any go-tos you'd like to share?
I do. I'm glad we brought this up. Hotel lobbies.
Yes.
Because everybody goes to their own room, right? You don't go to the hotel lobby.
That's brilliant. That's brilliant.
Yes.
I'll give you another one. The Von Maurer. I got this from Jay Zawoski, but he's absolutely right.
Oh,
for,
yes.
For some reason, if you're within a 10-mile radius of a Von Maurer, seek it out. It's worth it.
Have you guys
Google Maps?
Have you guys ever walked into an upscale restaurant because you're like, I know that bathroom's going to be clean? Has that ever happened?
No, I've never gone to the upscale restaurant. The hotel lobby is a go-to. I've been very disappointed at my local Mariano's, but that's neither here nor there. It depends on the time of day.
This is turning into a great call, man. I love it.
Yeah.
I think this is excellent. This is what the people want to hear.
Thanks, Pat. This has been 100%. Fun, man. This has been fun.
I love it. All right, we'll talk to you next week.
All right, buddy. Appreciate it. Yeah, no, we got a lot of stuff to get to, but Lawrence, you experienced special teams magic in the stands, did you not?
I did. So, Patrick, I went to the game this past weekend as a fan. For the first time ever in my life, I was there without a press pass. So I got to experience it in a little bit of a different way. And the Tory Taylor thing is a thing. He is now, like, when he walks out onto the field, people are cheering. And there was oohs and ahs with his kicks that ended up making him special teams player of the week in the NFC. As someone who has studied this, and I don't know if they're outside of an actual punter, if there's a better person for us to talk to about this, what is it that we're seeing with Tory Taylor?
They described it when they drafted him that he has every club in the bag, and that's the best way to put it, that he does. He has a driver, and he has a 60-degree wedge, and he has everything in between. And the only thing is, guys, it's a great thing. He's only going to get better. I mean, he's going to learn to punt at this pro level. It's a lot different than college. It's not just lining up and kicking like it is in college. Rules are a little different. Timing's a little different. And he's just going to get better. But he has everything. I mean, you saw it at the end of the game, pinning him down at the 7 or 8 yard line. His first, one of the first punts of the game, he put it on the 4 yard line, then hits a 66 yarder out of bounds. He has everything. So I'm excited to see him grow and get better. I think he's fifth in the league already, just in 4 games of punts inside the 20. And that is a weapon. If you can do that in this league, put him inside the 20 and maybe even get it, say, how many can get inside the 12 yard line. That's going to be something. You know, I'm sure they have goals like that. You know, I want this many punts inside the 20, but let's work on getting it close to the goal line if you're that good. And I think this kid is.
Pat, you know what it's like to be on a special teams unit that hits the field and a buzz is created. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like when Devin was here, the fans are alive, like Lawrence experienced, and the sideline is alive too, right?
Yeah.
It's like, so what does it do to a team when the special teams is a weapon in that way?
I think one thing it does, just in the big grand scheme of everything, it brings everybody together, all three phases. You know what I mean? Because I know the offense is probably watching the defense, how good they're playing. And then now the defense and offense are going to watch the special teams unit. They're going to watch Torrey Taylor. DeAndre Carter's had a good year so far at returning kicks. They're kicking away from him now. So I think what it does is it brings everybody together in the building and on game day, like you're talking about, that they want to watch it. So you become more part of the team, and you can affect the game, and they're looking to see how you do it.
By the way, we are going to be together this weekend.
Yes.
Me, Olin is busting my chops right now via text about tuition prices, and I love it. So it'll be me, it'll be Olin, it'll be Patrick Manley, and we're going to be at Wonderverse in Oak Brook. We are going to be in the Ghostbusters room watching the game together. We're going to broadcast the pregame watch in the Ghostbusters room, and then we're going to have the postgame show. It is going to be awesome. So I just wanted to point that out
Lawrence, do we have to wear costumes?
No.
Onesies.
I mean, if you want to, you can.
No, the Ghostbusters room. You said Ghostbusters, right? Do we have to be a certain Ghostbuster?
Yeah. I guess we could do the Ghostbusters thing. Don't
cross the streams while you're there.
Just Olin has to dress up. Only Olin. I was told that from Sam.
Good luck. Good luck with that one.
Good luck with that. Because I can tell you for certain that's not happening. Because that was asked at another place that we did the show.
Okay.
And Olin was like,
"Oh, that's right.
Yeah. No, I'm not doing that." No. Everyone was like, no. "You're right, Olin, you're not doing that."
Amazing. I hope they have a big Twinkie on the menu as a dessert item.
Everything that I've been told about this place is pretty magical. It's like a combination of the Sony theaters with Dave and Buster's with like Emporium. So like if you put all of those things together, like the new games, the old games, you get Wonderverse.
That's awesome. And you guys will be there for pregame and postgame on Sunday. A little Bears football in terms of the fullback Doug Kramer, Pat Manley. Mm-hmm. I mean, how did you feel seeing that? And in general, seeing the adjustments that Shane Waldron's seemed to make, it was referred to as a gimmick, and that pissed us off because I don't think that's necessarily a gimmick to put that guy out there. It's freaking power, angry, physical football, and it was beautiful, wasn't it?
I loved it. I mean, what you just told the defense, this is what we're running. We're running power O. Just figure out if it's going right or left. Most likely it was going right formationally, but stop it. You know what I mean? So we've seen all these trick plays and try to run it all different ways, and they just lined up and said, hey, listen, we're coming at you. Stop it. And they didn't. They didn't twice. So I loved it. I loved the fact they came out of the game running duo and they ran some more power O, and they changed their whole run scheme all week. But that right there was saying, okay, we've talked about it all week. We're going to come out here and do it. We're showing you what's coming. Now stop it.
Tell us what you saw in terms of the changed run scheme, Pat.
Mm-hmm. Just more gap. There's some more gap scheme. The bend play where it's kind of inside. It's more of an inside running play where they bent it back and made the touchdown for DeAndre Swift.
Mm-hmm.
But it just seemed to me that there was more of the double teams up front, more of downhill running, not going east and west. And that's what's been their success in the past couple of years with these guys. And I'm glad to see them adjust it. I'm glad they talked about it, whatever you want to call it, but they adjusted it. And they looked a little bit more power football, took care of the guys up front with the numbers and the double teams and that kind of stuff. And it looked a lot better, and it looked like it fit the personnel as well.
What did you think over – and here's the thing. I know that we're going to ask you about Caleb every week, Patrick. Like, I know mm-hmm. that that's going to be a part of it. And to a certain extent, I get that it's kind of unfair. How have you thought through four games he's evolved? Is it fair to say that there was growth from week three to week four?
Yes. And hearing his press conference, too, talking about not turning the ball over, which is great. He's 2-0 not doing that. But just as far as him as a quarterback – I love, and we've talked about it, that they're throwing everything at him. They're like, here's the entire playbook. This is what a 50-year quarterback should be able to digest and put out there and figure out while he's playing. And he's doing it week by week. He's getting better and better each week. You can just see that, his understanding of the offense, understanding of defenses. You can hear it when he talks about plays that break down, that he can tell you exactly what happened in the front and the back and everything. So I think just his understanding of pro football is what impressed me the most. And he's only going to get better. I think he's going to get more accurate the more he gets comfortable. There's some times in the pocket he took a couple sacks and got lucky with the penalties that I think he's trying to force himself to stay in the pocket. And he'll learn that, okay, maybe I can try to escape here, make something happen with my feet. But I really like the growth that's going on right now. Everything I'm seeing is just it's all in the positive.
You know, there was a moment during the game where Mark Sanchez flat out blamed Caleb Williams for the false start penalties. It was one that was on Cole Kmet at the mm-hmm. time. And that really struck me because I'm like, wow, that's on Caleb. And essentially Sanchez's point was that if you're going to be changing up your cadence, if you're going to be messing with that, you got to make sure that your guys are ready. And that got backed up by the Aaron Rodgers stuff that came out, didn't it? With Aaron Rodgers and Robert Saleh. So,
because that's kind of the goal. That's where you want him to be, is be Aaron Rodgers and use the cadence as a weapon.
So does that make sense to you that Caleb is responsible for the false start penalties?
Oh, there can be. There was one, though, that I believe was on him. If you look at his body language, I think Darnell Wright jumped. Can't remember which one it was. Sunday was a couple days ago, but there was one where he came out and like pulled his head up and clapped and kind of tapped himself, that it's like he got himself offside. You know what I mean? Maybe he was thinking too much and forgot what the cadence was on. But again, that goes back to the fact that everything's on the plate. Hey kid, try it, work on it, make it a weapon, because it is a weapon. I've seen it too many times with all the quarterbacks across the league against our aggressive defense. They would try to get him all the time. So I love the fact they're giving him that, and they're all just going to have to get on the same page. But again, there is growth every week. So if he's starting to do this already, That's tremendous on him.
What do you think of what's been addressed between Caleb and DJ Moore? And like, we're inside this conversation about these two guys and getting them on the same page. How does something like this get worked out in a locker room?
I listened to you guys earlier and I heard DJ's answer in the press conference and stuff. He's a pro, man. I love the way he's answering things. But when he did say the Caleb way, I thought that was very interesting, Spiegs. I thought you wrote a note down or something or shook your head when you heard that.
Yeah.
I wonder what that means inside the building. Does that mean they're treating him a little differently than a veteran like Keenan Allen and DJ and Cole Kmet? Because if they are, the guys aren't going to like it. So that could be something that they're not liking, that maybe he's being treated different than he is. Yes, he needs to be treated different because he's a rookie in that regard, but I'm talking about coaching him. Are they not hard on him? Are they just hard on everybody else? Are they treating him a little different in that regard?
So wait, can we connect this back to the Mercedes Lewis stuff then?
That's what I was wondering as well. I mean, that's what I can't come with all coaching with everybody. That's what I'm wondering when I heard that. We're never going to know. Hopefully we never know. I don't want it to get out of Hallis Hall if it's going on. I don't know. I'm not saying I know. But yeah, when I heard that, I'm like, huh, does that have something to do with the coaching of all the players and what that conversation was all about? Because guys, if that is happening, those veterans are not like him. I'm sorry. He's the quarterback of the Bears, but he's still a rookie in that locker room, and he is in everybody's eyes there.
Wow, that is fascinating. For anybody who did not hear this from earlier, DJ Moore was talking about the third down play before the end of the first half, where DJ gets open and doesn't run a straight line to the end zone, which is what Caleb was expecting. He instead goes outside, and as he was talking about it, here's what he said about how they're going to adjust post-conversations.
And now, we know we're going to go to Caleb way and we're going to get it right.
So we're going to go the Caleb way and get it right. And Pat Manley, your description of it sounds kind of like the Jordan rules or something like that, but for a rookie. And how?
Yes.
And that's a scary thought. I got to tell you, I heard it the other way, as I think you heard when we talked about it, that is DJ Moore has got to sublimate his ego, because in the modern NFL, you have to adjust to the quarterback. Everybody's got to make it about the quarterback and adjust to the quarterback, because that's how important it is. That's the way that I heard it. But your way does make sense, and it freaks me out a little bit, frankly.
Yeah, I know. I'm just putting it out there because I was thinking about that with the meeting with Mercedes Lewis and all that kind of stuff. Is that something that's driving those guys crazy that, hey, man, Caleb is still a rookie, man. I've got Pro Bowls. I've got the highest paid, you know, you got one of the best slot receivers in the league, a good tight. You got all these guys that are great. And they're like, wait a minute. He's still a rookie. But, yes, he's our guy. But is that something that maybe slipped from him? I'm just reading it into it that way. But I don't know. But if that is going on in the locker room, that's not good.
I got to say, Pat, I'm reminded, like, when I learned that phrase, it was about, like, the way that the Eagles made it possible for Carson Wentz to be really good. As a rookie and in the second year, and the phrase and the thought process was, everything that every person does within the organization has to be with the comfort and learning of the quarterback in mind, and that really made an impact on me, especially when you're asking a rookie quarterback on a rookie deal to be effective. And I got to say, even if that feels like entitlement to old school football salts, I don't care. I'm on that side of it.
No, I'm with you. They do need to do everything to make him better, right, and make him comfortable. But I'm just saying, if there is a disconnect of how they're coaching each player, that if he's being coached with kid gloves too much compared to these other guys, or in a different way compared to these other guys, and they feel uncomfortable, that could be something that can cause a little of this issue. But I'm not saying it is, but it could be. I'm just throwing it out there. I think I've learned now in 11 years of doing sports talk radio with you guys to throw that stuff against the wall.
100%.
What should the Bears be looking for out of the special teams of Carolina this weekend?
Oh, they're going to get kick returns. Carolina likes to give them kick returns. They will not hit touchbacks. So the other thing is Johnny Hecker is the punter who will he'll throw some fakes as well. So beware for that. He had one last week that was incomplete. But what could be interesting is the kick return team needs to be ready. They might have a chance to bust one, and we'll see what happens. Because right now, everybody's kicking touchbacks.
Well, that's beautiful. On a Turn the Page Wednesday, we can get a preview like that. Yeah, there's coaches over there that that Bears fans might be familiar with. Right, Pat?
Yeah, there's some guys that used to be there and guys that have spent time there that had an impact on them. So, you know.
Yes. Well, yeah, Chris Tabor was there. He's a dear friend of mine. That helps a lot. I mean, he's not giving me inside information. We were talking special teams about all sorts of stuff, about numbers and kickoff returns and all that kind of stuff. And
yeah.
We were just discussing just philosophies and why aren't teams, kicking returnable balls. You know, everybody's just kicking a touchback now. And Roger Goodell's talked about that maybe in the next year they'll move it out to the 35-yard line to discourage that. But Carolina is one of the few teams right now in the league that will kick hit kickoffs that you can return. So that could be an interesting part of the game.
You know,
I'm special teaming it up all during the week.
I gotta say that the fact that you do the kind of research you do and keep those relationships going and learning your stuff, just it makes me proud as your former partner, Pat. It's just like
Thanks, coach.
It really does. It's like you're on the Matt Spiegel co-host tree, and I couldn't be more proud.
That's more than a tree. That's like vines. What would that be? That's ivy.
It's a rainforest at this point. That's what it is. You know, it's a rainforest of so many trees and sequoias.
I think, you know, Pat, you're not even the tallest one in that rainforest. I worked with Will Perdue one time here on the score.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah.
Huh. That's a tall dude.
Yeah. It's an excellent point.
Very much so.
An extremely observant,
very tall
point.
Dude. Did you enjoy Bama, Georgia?
Oh, Lawrence, man, that is a thing. Of all the games I've played and attended, that's got to be one of the top five that I've ever been around. That game... that atmosphere, not just the tailgating and the fun, but I'm talking inside the stadium. And then the game, it was 30-7 or whatever the score was, and flips on it. And then Ryan Williams, a 17-year-old kid, makes that play in the SEC to come back and win the game. It was unbelievable to see a fan base Well, let's just say it's the loudest stadium I've ever been in. That was that. I've never heard anything like that. You know, on the field, it doesn't seem as loud to be in the stadium like that and high-fiving people. I didn't know who the heck they were. They're like high-fiving me. I was like, it was a hell of a football experience. Let's put it that way.
What's crazy is that kid is going to be 17 through the season. I don't think he turns 18 until next year. Like, that's wild that someone could rise to the top of the Alabama wide receivers and be the number one target for Jalen Milroe.
Yeah, it is. It's unbelievable. But another thing is he was driving around campus with his window down and everybody's waving at him and loving him. He had like his own little parade. But I think as a 17-year-old, I would do the same thing, right?
You're damn right. So far, you had the play of the year in college football.
Yeah.
It was really, really awesome. I'm glad that you got to experience what that's like down there, too.
That's awesome.
That's really cool.
Hey, Pat, we've unleashed a beast via the text line on the road games.
Uh-oh.
I mean, the volume of input is amazing, but it's really – there's one guy who is a trucker who just has unloaded the holster. So to speak. The volume of knowledge and the detail is just remarkable, and his last text is this one. I've been waiting for this moment for the last 15 years.
All right.
With somebody finally tapped into his particular level of expertise.
Look, man, we are a home for everyone. And if you were waiting for that and you felt like we bonded as show and listener in that moment, we appreciate you
kinda,
for that.
I kind of want to let this guy into the road game review thread. You know what I mean, Pat?
And Lawrence.
Yeah, let me in.
It's really beautiful.
The choices are key. Yeah, it's key. Patrick, as always, man, we appreciate you.
Well, it's fun talking to you guys, and we'll see you Sunday, Lawrence.
All right, my friend.
That's going to be a lot of fun at Wonderverse. We're going to have a good time. Olin, myself, Patrick Manley. Mully's got the weekend off, so I'm hanging in and filling in for him with the boys, and it is going to be outstanding. We happened upon something yesterday where Spiegs and I, look, this is the guy that hosts Hit and Run. Like he is well known as being the baseball guy here at the Score. We tapped into it when we were talking about the Cubs, and we realized we didn't give enough room because we saw the text messages and we saw people on Twitch and on YouTube.
Explosive.
We want to give you that opportunity to talk with us about this and talk in Chicago on the Score airwaves about the Cubs. So if you had a reaction to what happened yesterday with Jed Hoyer and you want to talk about the Cubs and how they go forward from here, we want to hear from you. 312-644-6767 is the number. The year is over. Jed has spoken, and a lot of people aren't happy about it. Let's hear from you next here on The Score.
Spiegel at home.
First of all, congratulations. You know, it's nice to have a couple new faces at The Score and not just kidding.
Afternoons on The Score.
Good morning. Can you talk about the difference between 83 and 79 and 83 and 79 from last year and this year and how you feel about the organization as it is today?
Yeah. Well,
it was my understanding that there would be no math.
Phenomenal first question by Bruce Levine at the Jed Hoyer press conference. I texted him and told him so. What's the difference between 83 and 79 and 83 and 79? That set the tone nicely for what the vibe is from Cubs fans' perspective.
I thought that the press conference was really strong and some of the tough questions were asked. I think people's responses with us talking about this yesterday were great. And we wanted to give you guys an opportunity to get in on it and talk with us directly if you want it. 312-644-6767 is the number. What'd you think of where things stand with the Cubs overall? And were you satisfied with the things that you heard Jed Hoyer say about how they can be a successful team that has this year after year and is not looking for like a 1 year fix?
Yeah, where we got to yesterday, Lawrence, at least from my perspective, is that he's still hung up on not building something that falls off the table at the end of a run, like doesn't want to become cumbersome with big money free agents and stuff like that. And he comes by that fear honestly. It happened to the Red Sox at the end. He thinks it happened to the Cubs in like 2018, 2019, 2020, really 2020. And then they had to make the moves that they made. So the issue.
I mean, they did win a division in 2020.
Yes, they did. Yes, they did. So 2021.
The playoff games were not great.
Right.
Because I don't think they scored, right?
But at the end, no, you're right. They did not. And their core guys did not get it done. But the issue to me is that this fear of becoming too cumbersome and falling off the table at the end and being bad for a while might be keeping them from building something great in the first place in terms of a philosophy.
So why don't we take a couple calls on this? 312-644-6767 out to Valpo and Eric. Hey, Eric, you're on Spiegel and Holmes.
Hey, guys, really enjoying the new show.
Thank you very much.
Here's the problem that I have. Oh, thank you. The problem I have with the lineup construction, in this day and age, you have to have three guys that you build a lineup around. Three guys that give you three things. Power, OPP, and
I'm down with that.
We do not have that. Hap is a nice complimentary player. He's not a guy you build a lineup around. Bellinger is going to be hurt for the rest of his time here. You don't build a lineup around that. And Swanson, great defensive player, good captain and all that. Is that a guy you truly build a lineup around? No, you don't. You need someone that gives you 35 home runs, 100 to 120 RBIs a year. Hey, we had that guy until about 2017, and he's doing it for the Phillies right now.
Yeah, he's, you know, with all due respect, I think the issues are now a little bigger than specific lineup pieces. Like, and maybe I'm zoomed out too much, but I'm looking at big picture team building concepts because I think that's what Jed continues to believe in. So, yeah, like, but I understand where he's coming from, of course. And Schwarber is certainly that power guy, and certainly there with RBIs and OPS and such. But I find myself thinking about big picture philosophy in terms of how, because he's zoomed out and thinking about it in 5 and 10 year increments.
I actually wish that he wouldn't at this point because one, job preservation might be an issue here. You can talk about what the Cubs are going to look like for the next 10 years, but once you get fired, that whole thing is going to change. I'm not saying that he has to go insane with the choices that he makes.
Or in the membrane, necessarily.
And saying, insane in the brain!
It's from the bone!
He doesn't have to do that.
A to the K!
But I don't feel like I'm listening to a guy that understands that his tenure could be coming to a close by sticking to that philosophy. It could happen.
Did you hear the backstory on how Buster Posey and Matt Chapman have dealt with each other? If anybody doesn't know.
No, I would love to hear it because I like both of those guys. I'm interested in how that worked.
Farhan Zaidi, who just got fired by the Giants, is a very smart, classically trained Andrew Friedman disciple who has been running the Giants. He and Matt Chapman, as they were talking about an extension, could not come to an agreement during the season, during the early part of the season. And Scott Boras was a factor, but just Farhan's, like, his desire perhaps to stay very strident and a little strict.
This goes against what we would ordinarily do. We don't want to extend. How old is Chapman? 30... Is he 32?
He's a little younger than that. He's a little younger than that, which made him appetizing. The offensive fall off in Toronto was scary.
31.
Okay, so yeah, you're on it. So, but Buster Posey had a relationship with Chapman and was asked by ownership to talk to Matt Chapman directly. And Buster Posey and Matt Chapman had a conversation. Buster said, you know, you're awesome and we'd like you to be here. And Matt said, well, I want to be here. And they were the key to working out the extension. And now a few months later here, Buster Posey has been named team president. Farhan Zaidi is gone. And Buster Posey is being heralded as an old school thinker, a guy who loves scouts more. Even though they just fired a bunch of scouts under Farhan, he's being heralded as that. So it's like the emotional and willingness to be greedy and go over the top for ownership or an organization had to get around the baseball boss in San Francisco. And I think that is a very instructive corollary to think about what the dynamics can be for a team like the Cubs.
Let's go to Terre Haute and talk with Sean. Hey, Sean, you're on Spiegel and Holmes.
Wow, what an honor. Hey, I'm sick and tired of the Cubs not behaving like a big market team. You see, like, Dave Dombrowski in Philadelphia. You see Brian Cashman with the Yankees. I mean, Spiegs is talking about falling off a cliff. There's got to be a point where we start spending and outspending people and signing these free agents like Aaron Judge. They keep saying we're in on these people, but we never get these people.
I think that that's fair to want the Cubs to act like a big market team. As you know, we should probably get obvious shirts, put it on a T-shirt. I've said, bully these hoes. Because that's what they should be doing in the National League Central. They should be bullying the teams in the National League Central.
I don't think I can say that, right? Is that
no,
on the list? I'm keeping a list.
We probably overall shouldn't say it, but that's not one where you're excluded because of race.
All right, should that go on your list of things you can't say?
Yeah, that's on mine.
Well, are they acting like hoes?
Yes.
Should they be? Then they should
they
be bullied.
They should be bullied, yeah.
Oh, man.
I see. You know what? I like your vision. Bishop Magic Don Juan, he would appreciate what you said there.
I'm going to look him up when I get home.
Not going to do it here on this computer? All right.
There is a... I think it's a very common sentiment that people want them to be greedy, and they want them to be... I think you have a lot of people in your corner about the hoe bullying.
My whole thing is that you have to kind of pick a lane here.
Mm-hmm.
You can't be right up against the CBT.
That's totally where they're trying to be, is ride that fine line.
And be an 83-win team.
Yeah. There's
you can't do it.
We don't have a clear picture of what's coming off the books exactly yet.
And it seemed like they're hoping that Bellinger does.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think he's going to. I think Cody's going to be here.
I think so, too. But I think when you listen to Jed talk about it, you could see that the look in his eyes is like, oh, I would have some flexibility financially if Cody Bellinger doesn't opt in.
Did you see how many arbitration-eligible players they have?
How many?
14.
They
have to make decisions on 14 different players. One of them is Isak Paredes, who will get a bit of a raise from his 6.3, I think it is, and won't be going anywhere. But I think you can, I bet you're going to see some people non-tendered. I bet you're going to see Patrick Wisdom non-tendered. And I bet you're going to see Nick Madrigal non-tendered.
Well, it was pretty clear that Craig Counsell had quite enough of all of that.
Yes, the Nick Madrigal thing.
Which lets me know that he's a smart baseball man.
You have somebody that you think could step up as the greedy one to push Jed away from his comfort zone. I have tales of two teams in the playoffs who have a different role that is stepped up, because it's always this role that steps up as the emotional and greedy one. I want to share that with you.
Let's continue the baseball conversation and continue to take your phone calls. 312-644-6767 is the number. Spiegel and Holmes here with you until 6 on The Score.
He swings, sends one high and deep to left. He's watching, so are 44,000 others. Oh, what a start for the Padres as Tatis leaves the building, and this place is on its feet. Padres lead it 2-0.
ESPN call from Carl Ravich of Fernando Tatis and the home run. It's Spiegel and Holmes on The Score. Mark Grody at the top of the hour with everything you need to hear and know from the Bears podium and the Bears practice today. Lawrence, I love the Padres. I bet on them to win it all, but I'm also rooting for them.
What odds did you get?
I forget. I did it right after the deadline, right after they grabbed all those relievers.
So you got a good plus number.
I think I got a very good number. I could check on it, but they went crazy on the bullpen, and just in general, AJ Preller is always bold and brave, and Xander Bogaerts is there bringing the championship DNA. Machado and Tatis are great. Musgrove is a local kid. Easy to root for Dylan Cease. Whatever Darvish was dealing with during the year seemed ugly and troubling, and now he is back. And Michael King was a great story last night. But they have a dead owner who was just going for it. Peter Seidler. And they wear the PS patch on their jersey. That dude was the dream rich hobbyist And he decided in his final years that he just wanted to take out the Dodgers. He wanted the Padres to be the kings of Southern California baseball. And he pushed all in to trade for Soto after signing Machado. And he signed Tatis mixed in there. And then they just kept going. He pushed all in to trade for or to sign Bogarts to an above market deal. You know, that 11-year deal. He just kept going. They signed the extension to Darvish. And Preller is a great partner for that kind of owner because he's a freaking madman. But when they needed to pivot, Preller said, well, why don't we sell on Soto after trading for Soto and giving up C.J. Abrams and Mackenzie Gore and everybody to Washington? Then they sold on Soto and they got Michael King, who was their game one starter last night.
He's throwing peas.
Aggressive, huge swings in both directions as need be, but big time payroll and an open mind. And I love what the Padres have been doing the last few years. So that's one example of the rich hobbyist owner getting greedy and emotional about it and driving the payroll higher.
What do you say to the texter that's been like, man, watching Detroit gives Jed another example of low payroll, we can get it done?
It's true. Just like Arizona did last year. And so he's able to think about it logically, because truth be told, the biggest money teams don't always win. We see it time and time and time again. Often they don't even make the playoffs. But if they make the playoffs, they, you know.
Although this year, though, there are the Dodgers and the Yankees and the Padres. Like,
I flipped it. The lower payroll teams often don't make the playoffs. But if they do make the playoffs, they have as good a chance as anybody.
Because it's a different thing, 162 versus what happens
right
once the games are over. But like the Mets, the Yankees, the Dodgers, the Padres, the Phillies, they're all there.
That's why it's a great conversation and an interesting one, is because there's logical sensibility in looking at the payrolls of winners and saying it doesn't. It's not always. In fact, it's often not the biggest payroll team that wins. That's why it ends up being a good conversation.
But my whole thing is that if you are in a position to be one of those, it's different if you have to make do.
Mm-hmm.
The right. Arizona Diamondbacks have to make do.
Correct. Milwaukee has to make do. Tampa has to make do. So they have
but
developed.
But why live in this space where you don't, and then you don't do what you need to do when it's time?
I think the Giants and the Cardinals are the best comps for what Jed and the Cubs are trying to do, which is to live just on the edge of the biggest market behemoths, but not quite necessarily complete the deal. Here's another example that's in the news of an emotional owner getting greedy and then having regret. Jordan Montgomery signed a big deal for 1 year with a buyout, or with an opt-out, I should say, and the Diamondbacks owner was apparently the one behind it. Ken Kendrick was the owner who got emotional and pushed to sign Jordan Montgomery just before the season began. And Montgomery was terrible. A 6.23 ERA in 117 innings, and the Diamondbacks missed the playoffs. And Ken Kendrick was on the Burns and Gambo radio show. Burns and Gambo! And he talked about his own decision and the organizational decision to throw a lot of money at Jordan Montgomery.
Let me say it the best way I can say it. If anyone wants to blame anyone for Jordan Montgomery being a Diamondback, you're talking to the guy that should be blamed. Because I brought it to their attention. I pushed for it. They agreed to it. It wasn't in our game plan. You know, when he was signed right at the end of spring training, and looking back in hindsight, a horrible decision, you know, to have invested that money in a guy that performed as poorly as he did. It's our biggest mistake this season from a talent standpoint. And I'm the perpetrator of that.
How about that honesty and regret? And if you're Jordan Montgomery, obviously.
I walk in there tomorrow. I'm walking in there tomorrow.
Pick up your option.
Here's my option. Here's my $23 million option. Tell your story walking, old man. That's what I would have done.
These are who owners are. These are who they are. Owners might be Ken Kendrick, or they might be Peter Seidler going for it, or they might be Tom Ricketts, who has his own priorities, and you get to think about them from a fan's perspective. Or they might be Jerry Reinsdorf, who has his own. They're weird people. They're baseball fans. They're just freaking, they're Steve Cohen. You know what I mean? And that's who has to get emotional and get greedy. And the question is Tom Ricketts going to get emotional and greedy to chase a title?
One more. Let's go to Tyler out in Montgomery. Hey, Tyler, you're on Spiegel and Holmes.
Hey, guys. A long-time listener, but first-time caller to this show. I've called in the morning, but I love the new team. Love the new show. It's great.
Thank you.
Just
you.
Some thoughts. Yeah, absolutely. Holmes, I mean, with you guys, you know, saying that the Cubs with Hoyer saying about Wrigley being
the weather being an issue.
Come on, I mean, are you kidding me? Every year, it's always something. I mean, yeah, the wind blows in, the wind blows out. Like, it doesn't matter. We need contact hitters. That's what I've always said it. Like, stop trying to hit home runs. We need contact hitters, line drive.
I would say that they need more home run hitters.
And I love the line drive. And I feel like the line drive always plays. And sometimes line drive guys develop power like Nick Castellanos. And then you're like, man, I wish I never let that guy walk out the door. That's a line drive doubles hitter.
It's the weather.
Yeah, give me a big pile of those.
I mean, you had two of those guys in your lineup. Schwarber thing still bothers me.
As it should.
It still bothers me because it was like, he's been the hitting profile.
And
it's
he's just
really annoying. And what you desperately need is what he does.
Yeah. I have I got the Padres at plus 3,000. So plus
chicken corners is on Speaks if that happens. I'll tell you that much. Let's get back into Bears stuff because the Bears report with Mark Grody is a must listen. He's got a lot of stuff from Hallis Hall today. You're jumping into your car. You're leaving work and you're saying, man, I want to get up to date. We got you. Spiegel and Holmes with Mark Grody's Bears Report next on The Score.